Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. My guest for this morning is Rebecca Whitehead Munn. She is an award-winning author and speaker, healthcare change catalyst, and value creator. Rebecca's award-winning debut memoir, The Gift of Goodbye, A Story of Agape Love, released in 2017, is a personal story of walking the end-of-life path with her mother. Her latest book, All of Us Warriors, Cancer Stories of Survival and Loss, includes advice regarding approaching someone you love living with cancer with tips and tricks for helping others feel joy amidst the pain. Rebecca has been a featured Maria Shriver Architect of Change on Surviving Grief and has shared her healing through yoga stories at mindbodygreen.com. She is a certified end-of-life doula and holds a certification in the foundation of positive psychology. Rebecca is also a Nashville Healthcare Council Fellow. She has served in executive roles for several global healthcare companies, most recently United Healthcare, and she is currently the Chief Operating Officer for 180 Health Partners. Rebecca and I will be having a conversation about her remarkable life's journey and her passion for writing about cancer and death to inspire others to be courageous and learn about their loved ones' wishes while creating lasting connections. Good morning, Rebecca. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing fabulous. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. It is a pleasure to have you on the air with me. All of Us Warriors is extremely insightful. Thank you for taking the time to compose such a heartfelt book. Congratulations on its release.
Oh, thank you, Donnie. I appreciate it.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Absolutely. So I grew up in Houston, Texas, in the United States. I'm the youngest of five girls, and we were born all within 8 years, so we're very close in age. So life growing up was chaotic and fun and always a lot going on. And my journey kind of took me to college for undergraduate, and then I've lived in Texas, California, Colorado, and now in Tennessee, where I have been for 15 years. And I have a marketing undergraduate degree and an MBA, and I have a lifelong passion for learning. So I've got a lot of other certifications as I've grown and developed. I just find new interests and dig in. And most recently, I'm actually an adjunct professor at a university here in Tennessee.
Fantastic. That sounds wonderful. Who were the major influences when you were growing up?
My mother was one, as well as my father, and in different ways. I really, being the youngest of five girls, I grew up a daddy's girl. I think my father decided that I was his boy that he wasn't going to have. So he raised me to love sports and taught me about business and goal setting. And I was never in the kitchen cooking with my mother, for example. So just a different path. And so I am still very passionate about sports and am big on setting goals and kind of having structure in my life. So I would say he influenced me that way. My mother, I really didn't have a relationship with till I became sick. I had a skiing accident and had knee surgery, and that kind of led to an opening of that. And so she influenced me later in life, I would say. My faith probably influenced me. So I grew up in the church and influenced me in different ways, right? I grew up, you know, going to church and then reached a place where I saw what I thought was kind of hypocrisy and people going to church but not like living what they would talk about, right, outside of church. And so then I spent some time away, and I would say my faith is a combination of traditional principles as well as a lot of metaphysical principles now. But it absolutely guides my life.
Right? Interesting. Very, very interesting. Yeah, that's very interesting. So what made you pursue a marketing degree? Is that because of your dad's influence in a way?
I think you're right. I think it was strongly influenced. And as a matter of fact, he wanted me to be an accountant and then go to law school. Mm-hmm. And after my first accounting class, I was like, that is not me. And so I found my way to marketing, which I have a passion for creating, and my mind kind of tends to connect seemingly unconnected dots. And through that, the marketing seemed to fit with me, right? And I was most interested in my international marketing class. And that was fascinating, because I had not been outside of the U.S. at that point, and it really opened my eyes to this global world that I have traveled to and I love, and I'd love to live in other countries someday. So.
Well, that's fascinating. That's very, very interesting. Did you get into a situation to whereby something swerved you along the way in terms of influencing you in college to whereby you minored in psychology?
You know, that's a good question. My oldest sister has a doctorate in clinical psychology, so I bet that influenced me a little. I was fascinated by what makes people tick and why they do the things they do. And I think part of that is being an observer of the youngest of five girls, watching all my very different sisters, you know, take different paths and do different things. And so it fascinated me, and so I ended up minoring in that. And I think one of my favorite courses was environmental psychology and how they design public places the way they do, and what people do when you stand in the middle of a very public entryway, like of a mall, right? If you just stand there, you know, observing what they do and how they react, it was really fun.
So you're a people watcher, basically.
Yes. I do love people. I love trying to figure them, you know, trying to figure people out. And over, you know, in my later years, I have really tried to hone my communication style and interaction to the person I'm talking to, just so that I can connect. Right, because sometimes it's challenging to connect when you don't do that. So
yeah, but I noticed that if people that has a tendency being a people watcher, so your area of strength, I guess, in the psychology sense point of view, is that you are really strong in individualization.
I like it. I think that makes sense. I'll have to hold on to that. I've never thought of it that way, and I think you're right. And I, you know, most recently last year, actually got a certification in the foundations of positive psychology. So that's my latest passion and interest on the psychology side.
Interesting. Yeah,
it's
because
all about
mental
wellness. Yeah.
Right.
Versus,
right. And in understanding your writings and so forth, I just noticed that that's something that you're able to individualize each individual, if that makes sense. And you have to, because you're writing about people and understanding them and so forth.
Absolutely. And I will say when I wrote my first book and I, you know, was working with a editor, and she said, you know, your father's character is really not developed. Which she said was a very interesting, you know, kind of reaction. And I guess all my focus was on, you know, my mother and for right. being ill and walking that end of life mm-hmm. path. So then I went back and developed his character. So, yeah, definitely has taught me a lot about individualization for sure.
Interesting. When did you develop the love for writing and storytelling as a form of expression?
I would say that I have always had a passion for writing all my life. I would keep mm-hmm. journals even growing up when I was a young girl. And I think part of that is the law of numbers. And when you have four other siblings who are, you know, talking a lot, I think it was my form of expression. It helped uh-huh. me kind of feel like I had a voice, if you will. And then I would write, I've written a book for work in a, you know, previous work life and mm-hmm. have written, you know, published white papers and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I've really kind of always written, I would say.
Very, very interesting. You're not the sibling that left, you know, little sticky notes. Don't touch this.
No, I was not that sibling. I think I was more the peacemaker. I just kind of would always try and find, you know, keep the peace and, mm-hmm. yeah, and followed more than led, right? Because you get left behind if you
don't go with the pack. So. Yeah. So true. How did your analytical and organizational mindset contribute to your approach when you found out about your mom's bout with cancer?
That's a great question. So I have been working in the healthcare field for 25 years, and I was fortunate to have a lot of connections into, you know, world-renowned cancer mm-hmm. centers. And so I would say that it really served me well, because when she was diagnosed when I was going through a divorce with a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old,
mm-hmm.
and we lived in different states. So she was actually visiting me and helping me through the divorce. My dad and her came to live with me for a little mm-hmm. while, and I could see that she was in pain. And so that kind of led to, hey, I think there's really, you know, like, you need to go home and you need to go get checked out. And she had had a colonoscopy a year and a half before, and they had found polyps, and mm-hmm. they had told her to come back in 3 years, and it had only been a year and a half.
Wow.
But she was having bleeding and pelvic pain, and so that was representation of something going on in her lower colon. And so I sent her home, and she was diagnosed, and she lived in Austin, Texas. That's where my father still lives. We grew up in Houston, but they had moved to Austin. And so she had breast cancer when I was in college. And so she had an oncologist at Methodist in Houston. And I think it really helped me, because I could get past the emotion of, I kind of shifted into a different brain and said, okay, she needs the best care that she can get. And I don't, you know, I need to go explore with her. So I went to Austin and went to some appointments. And if you work in healthcare, you know about the quality mm-hmm. measures mm-hmm. that the LeapFrog group put out. And what it's about is, you want a surgeon who does the same procedures all day long, you know, and all week be doing any kind of surgery on you. And then you want a facility that treats those types of patients and those types of cases on a regular basis, because then the nursing care and all the other people around you are very well experienced in that, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, kind of situation. And therefore you get better quality care. So I knew about that, and so I reached out to one of my clients who was at the Cleveland Clinic, and he said, you know, well, if I were you, you know, you could definitely come here to Cleveland, but she didn't really want to be displaced that much from Texas. And having, you know, grown up in Houston, she felt comfortable going there. So I just asked him for a referral for someone in Houston and found a surgeon that did this kind of surgery she needed, you know, all week long. And then there was a whole floor or wing mm-hmm. of Methodist Hospital that also, you know, where he did the surgery. So we quickly shifted from her going to, you know, going mm-hmm. to the people in Austin and moved her to Houston. She connected back to with her oncologist, and he was really supportive. So I think that it kind of helped me structure my approach, if you will, and all the steps I needed to take, and then kept me organized. Because as mm-hmm. you know, when a loved one is diagnosed with something that sounds very scary, the fear creeps in, and it's really hard to stay grounded and connected, you know?
Right.
So yeah, those skills really helped me.
Wonderful. Why did you decide to write The Gift of Goodbye?
Well, I always had a dream that I would write a book. And mm-hmm. As I said, I kept journals at different times in my life. I definitely kept one through my divorce and then through the experience with my mom. So she was diagnosed and lived almost 3 years longer. She was diagnosed with very late stage colon cancer. And so I had all these writings, and then my mom had her journal. So after she died, I would talk to my friends about, you know, the experience and what I learned, and they just kept saying, you should write it. You should write a book about this. Like, it would be really helpful for people because we don't talk
right.
about death. You know, it's just not a comfortable topic for people, even though, you know, 100% of us are going to die at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, you know, so, you know, I should write a book. So I would, over about 5 years, I would sit down and try and write, and then I'd hit a block, you know, a grief block, and I'd stop. And so I sought the advice of a friend of mine, Karen, who had published a book before me, and just said, you know, how do I break through this to get the book out, you know, onto paper?
Mm-hmm.
And she recommended that I start a blog and
mm-hmm.
write it on the blog, and that would give me some structure to, you know, and add kind of a process. So I had no idea what I was doing. I had never created a blog, but I just went to the computer and typed in WordPress and found a template and just started writing. And then I
mm-hmm.
made a commitment to myself that I was going to write every other weekend when my children were at their dad's.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going to be, you know, and I was going to stay committed. So what happened was I posted the first post, and I actually got comments on it. Like, people found it. And I'm like, how did this happen? And when I got my marketing degree, that was way before SEO and tags and all
yeah.
that. So anyway, long story short, I finished the first version of the book in 6 months. And then I was
mm-hmm.
like, wow, I need, you know, I really want to move forward with this. So I sought the help of an editor. I actually went to a publisher. So my friend who had published
mm-hmm.
recommended SheWrite.com, which is an online women's community of writers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was helpful to me. And through that, I found Brooke Warner, who is an editor. She's also a publisher of a publishing house, but at I was focused on editing and just said, hey, I have this book and I'd like to get an estimate. And so anyway, a long process of she sent me away and said, you need twice as many words. and then she did like a cursory editorial review and sent me away to kind of change the structure. When you write on a blog versus writing on a book, it's a different style, right?
Right.
So
right.
I had to shift kind of the syntax and some of the style. And so then I got to the developmental editing, and then the book was ready. So I will just
awesome.
Tell you that you know, I've mentioned my faith, and I know everybody has that they're very different, you know, and it's very unique in terms of their faith. But the process from finishing to publishing was very divinely guided. And, you know, people say it takes 4 to 6 years to get a publishing contract. And I finished my editing, and I asked the editor, and it wasn't Brooke. It was one of her people. I said, so can you tell me the difference between self-publishing and publishing, you know, with a publishing house? And she said that, you know, there are some differences. That obviously there's a cost difference. There's time difference, but there's, the most important one to me was, she said, typically a bookstore will not pick up a self-published book and have it in the store. And I'm a paper bookstore kind of person. So that was important to me. And I said, well, then, you know, then I know I want to do that. And she said, well, have you thought about publishing with us, you know, with the publishing house we're connected to? And I said, how would that work? And she said, well, let me make some inquiries for you. And 2 weeks later, I had a contract.
Fantastic.
And the book came out a year later. So, you know, I will say that my marketing degree and my logical kind of mind, how I approach things, and my business mind really helped me through that process, because I didn't know anything about the publishing industry. And you have to go, you know, you go through all these steps, and you finish the manuscript way ahead of when it comes out, way ahead. And so anyway, it's quite a process, and it was a fun process. And then I got good feedback, and I was like, well, I really enjoyed that. And I will tell you, Johnny, the side note I will tell you is that through the process of writing, found that I moved from living in my head, which is how I felt like I grew up, you know, very focused on business and goals and things like that, to living in my heart. It just really expanded my heart. And that was like just the most incredible blessing of an outcome of writing the book to me.
That's beautiful, truly beautiful. By the way, you're listening to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio, our podcast. Available on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitches Radio, Blueberry Podcasting, TuneIn Radio, Mixcloud, Podchaser, Listen Notes, and Hop Hopper. I'm Johnny Tan, your host, and my guest for this morning is Rebecca Whitehead Munn. She is an award-winning author and speaker, healthcare change catalyst, and value creator. Rebecca has been a featured Maria Shriver Architect of Change on Surviving Grief, and has featured her healing through yoga stories at mindbodygreen.com. She's a certified end-of-life doula and holds a certification in the Foundation of Positive Psychology. Rebecca is also a Nashville Healthcare Fellow, Council Fellow. She has served in executive roles for several global healthcare companies, most recently United Healthcare, and she is currently the COO of 180 Health Partners. We're having a conversation about her remarkable life's journey and her latest award-winning book, All of Us Warriors, Cancer Stories of Survival and Loss. Rebecca, what made you write All of Us Warriors, Cancer Stories of Survival and Loss?
Well, I was actually working on a different book at the time. I'd published my first book in July of 2017. And I was kind of carrying on from some of the themes about authenticity and living an authentic life and working on that. And then a friend of mine was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. And she was 40 years old with 3 children under the age of 12. And I was just sitting quietly one morning meditating and kind of praying for her and for guidance, and all of a sudden this idea popped in my head, was you should write a book about these stories of people experiencing cancer. And I kind of sat there, I was by myself in my house, and looked around. I was like, okay, did I really hear that? And I don't know if you've read or any of the listeners have read Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic, but that's one of my favorite books. And she talks in there about how ideas come to people. Is the universe like plants the idea, and if you're a good steward of that idea, you bring it to fruition. And that's just how it happened. And I thought, okay, so if I was going to do that, I had my own experience from two cancer experiences with my mother. And then I just started jotting down, if I was going to interview people experiencing cancer, what would I ask them? And mm-hmm. and it started to give me energy. So in my later years, I've paid a lot more attention to my body and how I react, you know, like how mm-hmm. I feel. Mm-hmm. when I'm talking about something. And so anyway, it was exciting. And I thought, wow, okay, I think this is what I need to do. I'm being guided to do this. And a few days later, I was having lunch with a friend who is a breast cancer survivor. And again, you know, the idea popped in my head, you should get her help to, you know, find people interview and all those things. And so I just looked at her and said, I think I have a job for you and I need your help. And so we just set out to, you know, it was one of those very casual things that you just go, okay, how do we find these people? And she knew people from that she had, you know, walked the cancer path with
mm-hmm.
that she could reach out to. But she and I both just put it out on our social channels and said, you know, I just said, I'm working on this book. And if you have a cancer story and they're willing to share, let us know. And I think we had like 18 stories. And then I really thought about it more. And I thought, you know, these are all of stories of survival. And mm-hmm. there is a reality in cancer that some people do die. And it was, my mother died, obviously, but mm-hmm. it would be important to include stories from loved ones who had lost their loved one to cancer. And I actually had two friends who had lost their spouses to cancer. And I just reached out to them and they were willing to participate. And then, so we just sat down and started interviewing in 2018 and got through all the interviews. I kind of had the base of the book, and then I started the job at United Healthcare, so I had to kind of put it on hold. And then I came into 2019 and I thought, you know, I want my book to be published in 2020, so mm-hmm. I better get back focused on it, right? And I submitted the introduction to the same publisher, and mm-hmm. the book got green-lighted from the start. And every step has just flowed so easy. So that's when I know that it's right. And I'm really, I'll just be honest, you know, it's not mm-hmm. about me. It's really about mm-hmm. all the people and the stories in the book. And my goal is really just to help others. So it's the goal is to help people who have been diagnosed with cancer understand what the journey may be like, even knowing that each journey is unique and different. There are some similar pieces, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then also helping loved ones, coworkers, community colleagues know what to do when someone they know has been diagnosed with cancer. Because mm-hmm. the natural reaction is fear and to withdraw, right?
Right.
Oh no, mm-hmm. I'm going to leave them alone. I don't, you know, I'm so sad for them. I'm, you know, and I don't know what to do. And I'm afraid to say anything because if I say something, I may say the wrong thing. You know, those are reactions
right.
I've seen.
That's true. Very, very true. Why the word warriors?
You know, it's a word that's been used, I think, in different settings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my friend Robin, so her little group of people that were all in chemo together, they named themselves the Warriors. And for me, I will say, I really liked the word warrior because a cancer experience is something that is very personal, and it's very connected to every part of you, if that makes sense. It's a mind,
mm-hmm.
body, spirit,
mm-hmm.
Experience, and how you react, you know, what you believe, what you're willing to try, how open you are, makes a difference. And so to me, a warrior is, I practice yoga, and you've read in my bio, and so, you know, I think of warrior from that standpoint, and that's really just being grounded and centered and focused on, you know, your beliefs and who you are. And so that's why the word warrior meant a lot to me.
Very, very interesting. When you look back at talking and interviewing all the individuals you talked to for your book, what was it like to listen to the various stories, and especially about loss?
It was very hard. It was very hard. I will say that the first interview was a little more surface-based, if that makes sense, right? And then I went back, you know, I worked on kind of putting the basics of the story together, and then I went back and interviewed each person individually and sometimes a couple of times. And so the initial part, it was very, very heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching, what people went through, because I heard several stories of, you know, medical errors or people not, you know, imaging centers not calling back when something's wrong with a scan, when they should
mm-hmm.
have, those kinds of things. You know, my friend Robin was misdiagnosed by a
mm-hmm.
very major cancer center. And that happens. It happens in our life. But I think we think, at least I will speak for myself, that I grew up thinking that medicine is a perfect science and doctors know all. And so, you know, they're doing the best they can with the data and science that they have access to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was surprising. It was not surprising for me working in healthcare, but it was surprising to hear that as a commonality through many of the stories. And then the follow on, when I would be working with them through really fleshing out some of the details,
mm-hmm.
I found myself just crying. I mean, I was just on the phone with them, right? but I found myself crying through it, and I was grateful they couldn't see me because it, you know, I wanted to stay positive for them. But it was tough. I really grew through the process, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Listening. Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting. How do you balance that tenderness and courage, though?
How do I balance it?
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it's probably not something I've been good at all my life. I think that I, through writing my first book, it really opened my heart and I experienced life differently. So I think more about the people and the humans,
mm-hmm.
and where they are. And I use more of all of my senses to gauge, you know, somebody's body language or the kind of words they say, where they're at, and
mm-hmm.
then try and connect from that standpoint.
Very, very interesting.
The reality is none of our story, you know, our stories are our stories, and they're not wrong because they're our stories. Does that make sense? So I think sometimes.
Yeah.
We as humans get stuck in the right and wrong, and it's really our, you know, it's our perception of reality is our reality.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's the world we're living in. Does that make sense? So
mm-hmm.
just trying to be, I mentioned being a lifelong learner. So in every conversation, I'm just out to learn something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. Yeah. What would you like for the readers to gain from reading All of Us Warriors, Cancer Stories of Survival and Loss?
Well, I'd like them to gain probably three main things. One is the knowing that a cancer diagnosis does not define the human. It is just a season in their life. And to wrap them with love, however that looks like, you know, from the person's standpoint. So that would be one. The second is to engage versus withdraw, even when the fear creeps in. And it's really okay to say, I don't have any words, but I want you to know I'm sad, or I'm thinking of you, or something simple like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the third one is remembering to try and find joy in the midst of pain.
Mm-hmm.
Because this human condition, we all experience pain. And if there's a way to find moments of joy, then it kind of lessens the burden of the experience.
Right. So true. And I particularly like the second one in the sense that when it's all said and done, I think you would agree with me. True connections are truly made in between the silence, between words. It's the fact that just being there.
I agree, Johnny. Mm-hmm. I agree. And it's okay to just be present and not say anything. You're exactly
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm. So
really
true.
Good point.
You're listening to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio, our podcast, available on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Blueberry Podcasting, TuneIn Radio, Mixcloud, Podchaser, Listen Notes, and Hot Popper. My guest is Rebecca Whitehead Mann. She's an award-winning author and speaker, healthcare catalyst, healthcare change catalyst, and value creator. Rebecca has been a featured Maria Shriver Architect of Change on Surviving Grief, and has shared her healing through yoga stories at mindbodygreen.com. She's a certified end-of-life doula and holds a certification in the foundations of positive psychology. Rebecca is also a Nashville Healthcare Council Fellow. She has served in executive roles for several global healthcare companies, most recently United Healthcare, and she's currently the Chief Operating Officer for 180 Health Partners. We're having a conversation about her remarkable life's journey and her latest award-winning book, All of Us Warriors, Cancer Stories of Survival and Loss. I'm your host, Johnny Tan. Rebecca, what was the most common theme about cancer survivors?
I will say of these stories, and this was not a, as I mentioned, how we got the stories was really just putting out the word and
mm-hmm.
people raising their hands. But the common theme is there is an element of some type of faith through each of the stories. And through both the stories of survival and loss. So that was interesting for me. Different types of faith, you know, different stories, different representations, but even in one of the ones of loss, you know, the physical kind of manifestation of some kind of sign that the loved one is connecting with you after they've died. And in that story, it was about rainbows, you know, and that what was so special with that for me is that is what I wrote about in The Gift of Goodbye, is my mother and I had this time to, we had become very close before she was diagnosed, and we had all this time to spend to talk about her life and process everything we wanted to process, which was an incredible gift to have that time. And
mm-hmm.
we came up with the idea of what she would come back to me as after she died, and it was a purple butterfly. And I saw a purple butterfly on the third day after she died.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen countless purple butterflies after that. So that requires a belief in something bigger than yourself, right? Whatever
right.
the type of faith is. So that was the common theme I saw.
Very, very interesting. Your book is beautifully designed because you have the advice for others and how others support me and how I support myself from the various stories and contributors. What of the I think the strength in this is the fact that you have 20 different way of doing things, for lack of a better term, since there are 20 contributors mm-hmm. here. So there's no mm-hmm. it's not a cookie cutter, you know, like, hey, you just need mm-hmm. to do this, you need to do that. And mm-hmm. that sometimes doesn't really work because it is truly individualized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. Because if you think about it, each one of us is an individual. Our mm-hmm. body makeup is individual, right? It's mm-hmm. unique mm-hmm. to us. How it functions, I mean, there's some generalities of how our heart works or things like that. But when you add each of us live in a different environment, and each of us has a different biopsychosocial makeup, right? What are
right.
kind of emotional outlook. And therefore, the experience is going to be unique, but there are commonalities,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so we interviewed men and women from 5 different states in the United States is where they live, and they represent 7 different types of cancer and all stages of the disease. So as I mentioned, each story being unique, you read about there's at least 3 stage 1 breast cancer stories mm-hmm. with females, and each one is different. But there's common themes, right? So that's an interesting piece of it.
Yes, definitely. What advice do you have for those people who are facing a terminal illness?
I would say the first thing is really to take stock of who they are in their life
mm-hmm.
and what they want out of the remainder of time that they have. I will say that, and this is probably not a very common statement a very popular statement for physicians, but I also know that people have been diagnosed with terminal illnesses and they have survived. So I also know that's possible, right? So
mm-hmm.
I would say take stock of your life and get really grounded in who you are and what's important to you. That would be the first thing I would do.
Very interesting. Can you share some advice for people dealing with grief?
Yes, I think the most important piece is to know that grief has its own timeline. It will show up sometimes at very inopportune times, and it is not something you necessarily get over. You learn to live differently. So we all experience changes in our lives every day. And so
mm-hmm.
the changes that we are used to and comfortable with, such as the sun rising and the sun setting, we don't think of that as grief, that we've lost the sun, you know, and now it's dark
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
it happens every day. So there are lots of things in our lives that we don't think about that change. But when it's a change that is not something we expect, it sometimes can manifest differently. So people, I actually, in the writings I did for Maria Shriver, I grouped mm-hmm. it into 3 buckets. So there's kind of the silent griever, and these are when you don't want to share what you're grieving
right.
about.
Right.
So journaling or, doing art, or playing music, or being outdoors. Those things really helped me in those times where I didn't want to share. And then there's kind of the situational griever, and that is you see the grief kind of building up, if you will. So maybe a close friend is moving away and you get advance notice, or a job is changing and you get advance notice. And that is that's a little different because you have a little time to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that kind of, and this is the planner in me, but I found that like thinking through and imagining myself on the other side of that change
mm-hmm.
and what would that feel like really helped lessen the blow of the grief. and it enabled me to function. And then the, you know, the third is kind of the angry grieving. So this is very sudden grief that is, it, you know, it's in my grief work, people, you know, want to blame someone or blame the situation or sometimes get angry at
right.
the person, your loved one, who's trying to support you, right? And that's all
right.
very natural. And I think with that type of grieving, different coping skills are the, you know, really important. And so one that I used and I still use is when grief would show up and I would feel paralyzed, and sometimes that would be standing in the grocery store that I would go into, you know, 3-4 times a week, and all of a sudden I didn't know where I was or what I was doing, I would just say to myself, right now I'm putting one foot in front of the other. And I would just focus very intently on my feet, and I'm just going to take a step and then another step and then another step. And pretty soon I've kind of moved out of the molasses and into, you know, something more fluid, and shifted. So that's been a helpful tool. So I think the answer, you can't say one thing is going to help everybody with grief.
Right.
Grief is very different and unique, but those are three different things that I did that were helpful.
Sure. Definitely. One of the things also is we get into this process of all the what ifs. Should have, could have. Well, that that doesn't happen. It will never happen. So if you continue to play that part of the equation, you're not getting anywhere. And so if there are tears involved, then let it be tears of joy of what actually happened, pivoting to the things, remembering the wonderful moments you have versus the what ifs, because the what ifs are exactly what it is. What if?
Yeah, I agree, Johnny.
In introspection, what was the most enlightening experience for you in putting together All of Us Warriors?
Well, I would say it is how it changed me listening to the story. So even experiencing what I experienced with my mother through two cancer diagnoses, I've learned so much more. And as I was finishing the manuscript, my best friend from college was actually diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer. And it was devastating to me. But here I was, you know, I had all this knowledge from the that I just gathered from all these people. And so I honestly approach him differently because of all the wisdom I learned from these folks. So I text him often, you know, I try to do it weekly, or I just, you know, call and leave a message. And there are many times when we agree that we're going to talk on this day and it doesn't happen. And I just keep showering him with love, and I mail him cards from time to time. And that's, I think, very different, because what it helped me see by listening to all these stories is the person experiencing the cancer diagnosis, their whole world is changing around them. And they're going through so many different things. And there are times when they just don't want to talk.
Right.
They don't want to talk about it. They're kind of tired of talking about it because they're having to start chemo again, or they're having to have a different surgery. And it just, you know, so I just realized that my job was to wrap my love around him, even at a distance, in the best way I knew how, which is I just, when I see things, cool pictures, I'll send it to him and I'll say, hey, I'm thinking about you and hope you're doing well. And this, what I learned from the book, changed that, because I would not have reacted this way with him. I know that, because I didn't know to do that. I would have given space, right? I would have, I would have withdrawn probably some. So that's been amazing for me.
That's true. And this is the interesting part, because we talk about the what ifs, and then the other side of the equation is also later. Well, later never comes. You have to live in the present moment. Act in the present moment.
Exactly.
So that's the difference.
Exactly.
Where can someone,
I agree.
Where can someone go to get more information about you, buy your books, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Okay, thank you for asking. I have a website that has a blog on it, and I'm pretty active on the blog. And it is Rebecca W. Munn, author, rebeccawmunnauthor.com. And then I have a Facebook page, and that's Facebook/Rebecca W. Munn, author. And then I have a Twitter account, and that's at Rebecca W. Munn. I would
wonderful.
Love to hear from you. I also have a monthly newsletter, and so you can sign up for the newsletter on my website.
Wonderful.
And what something
go
that,
ahead. I'm sorry.
That really, I was just going to make a request that I just love to hear feedback from people when they read my books. It just I think that's the kind of inner psychologist in me. I just like learning how did you receive. You know what I wrote, like I
right,
know how I
right.
intended to write it, but how was it received? And so I'd love to hear from the listeners, and then you can buy the book on Amazon, as well as Parnassus Books, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, and Bookshop. It's available through all those. And my one request is that you be willing to take a few minutes and write a review, because those reviews are really helpful to other people.
Right. So true. So true. What is next for you?
You know, that's a good question. I'm still in the midst, since the book came out September 1st, I'm still in the midst of various joining shows and writing guest articles and things. And so I'm not sure yet. I'm starting to teach this class that I mentioned at the end of this month, and which is this weekend. And then, you know, I don't know. I'm just gonna kind of let myself be guided to what happens next.
Wonderful, wonderful. As we close this hour, since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Absolutely, I would. And this is something I learned following writing The Gift of Goodbye. Is I start my day with quiet time. And whether that's meditation or just sitting quietly, it doesn't have to have a fancy name. It's just making time to be quiet and listen. And listen to kind of your own, yourself, and where you are. And then being grateful. I have a gratitude practice every morning. So I'm grateful for all that is. And that helps me kind of start the day with a glass half full mentality, and focusing and being present on what is and in the moment, and turning off the voices of all the things down the road that I don't really need to think about right now. I just need to be present. So that's my recipe for life.
Fantastic. That's beautiful. Rebecca, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me next Thursday morning, November 5th. My guest will be Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be having a conversation about their latest release, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Age is Just a Number, 101 Tales of Humor, Wisdom, and Adventure for Life After 60. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Rebecca, it has been a true pleasure. Thank you again and have a very blessed day.
Oh, thank you, Johnny. The pleasure has been all mine. I hope you have a blessed day as well.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.